Now, a caller says, regarding respiratory problems, some people are unfortunately renting houses and they have to suffer in homes that are unsuitable. Of course, people are taking the mica victims into consideration, but there are other people who are renting and suffering with respiratory problems. The reason is that the landlords won't fix the house due to it costing them too much money. The poor tenants has nowhere to go then, as you can't find other accommodation or afford it. A landlord will not accept HAP if they're taking cash. Every landlord should be taking the HAP in Donegal, but a lot aren't, as they are operating with cash. They do have the right to go to the Regional Tenancies Board, but then there's a fear that they'll get kicked out. Renters aren't getting a fair deal. Is there more to be said about that? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. That's 086 60 25,000. Now, you'd be very familiar if you're across the news of the case of John O'Meara. He won a Supreme Court ruling to get a widower's pension and says he was defending his family when he took the case. John, good morning to you and congratulations. I am sure this is very, very important to you on a number of different fronts.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Yeah, this is amazing changes to my life. It means, you know, I'm finally getting the recognition as a family, like every other family.
And what was your family circumstance? And maybe you could explain to the listeners then what sort of excluded you in the first instance from the widower's pension.
Yeah, myself and Michelle were both in a relationship for like just near 20 years. We had three kids. We had a house, we had a home. We were the same as any family. We were never married. We were both employed. When Michelle sadly passed away, I realised that, things were different as regards to when it comes to, to getting benefits and stuff. Like, there was nothing there in place for someone in my position.
And then, obviously, whilst you're dealing with the loss of Michelle, but also, of course, managing the grief of your children, an awful lot going on, then you're sort of turned away from the state in terms of support. It's almost as if everything that you and Michelle had built together and worked together on was disregarded by the state.
Yeah, it's essentially that's what it was. We were always treated as a cohabiting family, a cohabiting couple, for tax purposes or for any, if you were to claim any job seekers or do anything like that, you'd always be, you'd be means tested together on things. So, you were treated equal always in that side of it. But when it came to benefits such as, the widow's pension, no, you were treated completely different.
And why was it so important for you to pursue this, John, as we mentioned, with everything that you would have been dealing with in any case?
It was important to me. I just seen, it just felt wrong that, the state would treat families completely different on the basis of, of whether they were married or not. And, it's also for the children of all the families are equal in my eyes, and to know that our family was just being looked down as not equal in the eyes of the state, it drove me to it, and it's just something I felt I needed to be done.
Yeah, and there's an awful lot of people that in that space aren't able to do that and just say, well, that is the way it is, we've fallen through the cracks. This is not just for you. Hopefully, John, this sets a precedent for other people in a similar situation, albeit something that might very sadly come to them into the future, or even maybe now they can get it looked at retrospectively. This wasn't just for you. Are you hopeful that this sets a precedent now for others, John?
Oh yeah, definitely. No, this is going to set a precedent for others. And like I had thought to myself, that's one of the other driving things behind this. Was I thought, someone has to do this. If someone had done this before me, I would never have had to do this. So yeah. And I didn't want to. It's nice to know that other people aren't going to end up in this situation again.
Right.
It's a hard road. It's a hard road to go down. And when you find out that there's no support in place for you, it makes that road so much harder.
And it's also too, when you've got the state, your country sort of battling against you too, it's kind of, it's demoralising. I mean, obviously you're up for the fight, but they're trying to argue that you're wrong, that you are different, that your family meant something else or was something else. It's kind of sad when you think that it's actually, this isn't sort of some big foreign corporation or a vulture fund or something. This is your own country that you're having to fight against.
Oh yeah, and it is really, really daunting. And it does make you feel bad to know, like, yeah, and you're being told this is it, you just have to accept it. It's a hard fight to fight, like, but I'm delighted the way it turned out, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Listen, stay where you are, John. I'll say goodbye to you. I just want to bring Sinead Murray, Communications Officer with Truro. Now, it's the National Information Service for Unmarried Parents. Sinead, welcoming this decision.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we're absolutely delighted that John and Mark won the case yesterday. I mean, it's going to be really impactful in terms of cohabiting couples with children. We are also calling on the government, when they introduce the legislation to rectify John's situation, to include cohabiting couples without children, because there's lots of different family types in Ireland. And, you know, we're introducing a referendum to expand the definition of family. We're talking about cohabiting couples with and without children, lone parent families. So why not take this opportunity and, you know, protect these families in legislation as well as in the referendum?
Yeah, and I've raised a lot of questions sort of towards John about him, understandably. But it's also the children too, and the recognition that they receive, or are they different to other children? And if so, why? Clearly now the court has found that they shouldn't be treated as such, but this is about the treatment of children as well in this situation.
Absolutely. I mean, the court ultimately found that the equality article in 40.1 was to recognise that John and Mara had a right, but also for children's rights, they're not meant to be discriminated based on their parents' marital status. And one of the things that the court had said was, you know, that parents can decide not to get married, but a child can't decide what family they're born into. So it was really, really important that ruling came out, and to recognise that all children should be treated equally, regardless of any sort of parent or marital decision. And we'd be very supportive of that. And it would be ultimately what's in the best interest of the child, which, you know, is why we had the children's rights referendum.
Do we have any evidence or knowledge as to how common this is? I suppose just in the course of the case or what have you, was it determined how many other families and individuals might be affected, like John was, Sinead?
It's a little bit hard to know the specifics for John's case, but you know, we have 150,000 cohabiting couples in Ireland, and there's 75,000 of those are with children. Now, there's specific things around John's case because of the age of himself and Michelle and the children. Like another woman we had who was supporting John's case, her children were grown up, so she wouldn't be entitled to it because, you know, she's therefore without eligible children. So even when John now has got this victory, she won't be protected, even though her partner passed away and she had to sell her home. And another example that we are hopeful would be protected as well would be Maria Doyle, who her partner passed away extremely suddenly, and basically, she had to give up her job because she couldn't afford the childcare without this widow's pension as well. So, you know, there are lots of cases around this. And if you include cohabiting couples that don't have children, it's quite significant. We'd estimate around 10 to 20,000.
So, finally, Sinead, if people are listening and they were declined the widower's pension or the widow's pension, what should they do next? Do you wait and see what this new legislation looked like, and if there's a sort of retrospective element to it? Do they make contact with the department, the relevant department, or social services? What do people do now, would your advice be?
I'd advise them to speak to their local Intruo office about it. If it's a new application that they never applied before, or one that was retrospective since John's hearing, they could get in contact with their Intruo office. We'd really recommend that. But also to give us a call, because we will have up-to-date information. We'll be following this very closely of how the legislation is passed and what it covers. And so we can give people really clear information on that. So our website is Truro.ie, Treoior, or our phone number is 01670120. We're open 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday to Friday. So we'd really encourage people to reach out if they are struggling with this, because it is very complicated.
And very finally, I don't know how it happens. It seems to happen with every issue that this has sort of been, by some, seems to have been trying to put into debate of how important marriage is, or it should only be people who are married that don't get it, and people should be making that commitment before they get these entitlements. John, maybe you'll speak to that. Like, I don't really see the benefit of that type of debate. Have you seen any of that sort of activity on social media? And if so, any reaction to it?
Yeah, no, not as much. It hasn't been as much. I don't think it's. I think just the wider public don't seem to have that view.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think so. Yeah, like,
And cohabiting is far more common now. And also, like, you know, people have to take into account, like, people cohabit now for a lot longer before they get married. Obviously, for financial reasons, you know, it's not as easy anymore to just run out and get married. So, like, people are engaged and. For people could be engaged for 3-4 years on average now before they even get married.
Well, this is typical of the sentiment coming in, and I'll leave it with this. Well done to John and his lovely family on this happy outcome. Seen them on the news. Great for an ordinary person to take this on. Bless him on his loss. And in all of this, the critical thing is obviously your loss and the loss of your beautiful partner, Michelle. We wish you best of the best of everything going forward, John, to you and the children.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Take care of yourself. Thank you, John. And thank you, too, to Sinead Murray, Communications Officer with Truer. And that was John O'Mara there. He won a Supreme Court ruling to get a widower's pension and says he was defending his family when he took the case. So 8660 25,000. And a listener says, in case anyone missed it, Mr. Bus Éireann has been criticised for curtailing its bus schedule in the west of Ireland during the recent cold snap. The curtailment had nothing to do with road conditions. It was due to electric buses failing to function due to cold temperatures. Perhaps Eamon Ryan will provide rural communities with huskies and sleighs in the winter. Yeah, indeed, we talked about that in the show yesterday, and the principal problem seemed to be that, obviously, cold weather can have an impact on battery power. But also, when you put the heating on, I think the heating was an issue, that once they put the heating on, it greatly reduced the miles that they could cover. Read the Micah Houses. I think we need another big march and we will get behind them all. Paddy Diver started it, and I salute this man who fought so hard to get resolutions for everyone. The government is not going to listen to anything anyone says because we are up here in Inishowen. Shame on you all, especially the Housing Minister, Dara O'Brien, who's too weak to come on air to speak to us all. Indeed, it's still to this day baffles me. Baffles me that we had a multi-billion euro scheme that was announced, primarily affecting Donegal, though not exclusively, and the minister behind it, multiple of billions, didn't want to speak about it. Minister Harris, Simon Harris, is going to be on the show later. He announced, you know, 10 or 15 million or something. Very keen to get on and talk about it, and yet we've got a multi-billion, multi-year scheme, and the minister responsible for it doesn't come on to talk about it, which I find really, to this day, continue to find it really quite remarkable. Okay, let us talk now. To our next guest, Sharon. Joins us. She's living in a defective concrete home, and well, good morning to you, Sharon. It's a lived nightmare for you. You know all about it, but I suppose when the weather comes to pass, everything's exacerbated. What was the last couple of days like for you?
Yeah, good morning, Greg. The last couple of days was just one word, horrific. No one slept. We were 100% sure that night that the house was going to come down. The noise of the roof moving, the windows and doors were like literally bulging in because there's that much gaps. I don't know, they're just held together by bits of stuff that my husband is trying to put in the gaps to secure it for as long as possible. It's just an absolute living nightmare. The house was that cold that night of the storm. It's cold normally, but it was worse because of the winds and coming in through all the gaps. People like ourselves heading to bed with blankets. There was no heating. Just one word, it's horrific. My heart goes out especially to the pensioners. My mum and dad is one of them, and I'm talking for everyone when I mean this. They are living in a defective concrete block home also. They're in their 70s, and their houses, they literally shouldn't be in it at this time. They've nowhere to go because everyone in our family has the defective concrete blocks.
Unbelievable. Sharon, I was watching a video on TikTok, as it turned out to me, and it was a fella talking about air getting in through air vents and getting down into your cavities. And I was looking and I was thinking, my word, if that's all you had to worry about during the storm, no disrespect for him, but I mean, you can't heat your house. The noise, the creaking, the cracking, the fear that it can fall, it just must be a living nightmare.
It's an absolute living nightmare. People's mental health is, I would say, not even deteriorated. It wouldn't even be a word you could use. And then with the storms, then their fears heightened. You know, they're living an absolute, every one of us are living an absolute fear with the, you know, the possibility of the house coming down on top of us. And as I say, with the storms, it's worse. I just don't know now. We're given another storm supposedly coming tonight. I don't know if we can stand another storm with all the battering. I just don't know where it's going to end. I just hope that a house doesn't come down on top of someone.
But you see, the thing is, Sharon, it's, you know, we've been talking about this for a long time. It's pure luck that someone hasn't been severely injured by a falling house or a falling element of a house. It's only luck. It's inevitable that it's going to happen. That's what's so bloody worrying.
Yeah, as I say, it's heightened with the storms, and it's definitely only a matter of time before something comes down. Because, for example, even to close a door in our house, like if you close it out and you have to actually slam the back door now because it doesn't close right, you can actually feel the house vibrating.
Karen, we're looking at these cracks in the video that you posted. I know you talked about it a little earlier on. Can you talk about that? That's effectively the house parting, isn't it?
Yeah, that's upstairs in our house is a no-go area. It has been now for a long time. The children, we moved them downstairs. They're in a sitting room downstairs. You couldn't even sleep in that room because the gap is, you literally could slide your hand into the gap because the roof has raised. It's pulling. The house has just been pulled in every direction. And there's no way. I don't even know how the house is still standing. And I'm speaking for a lot of people around this area, never mind further on. I don't know how. And again, people too also that have paid money and built holiday homes, and they can't even, you know, they had to do the outside skins for the fear of their house coming down. And it's just unbelievable. And, you know, I keep saying this, anybody that doesn't believe how bad these houses are would need to come down, stay a night, and, you know, experience.
I don't think they would. I'd say, especially, you know, with the bison floors and with a roof potentially. Yeah. I don't think they would. I think they'd have a look at it and go, look, I get it now, I'm out of here. But you don't have that luxury to get out of there, in inverted commas. Is the scheme anything to you? Is it accessible to you at all? Or are you waiting to see if it's enhanced or improved or, as some would say, actually 100%? Or maybe you're in the process. I don't know, Sharon.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's Greg. The question.
Yeah, we're in, we are in the scheme. We're just waiting to see if it, you know, if it becomes an enhanced scheme. But the problem is, you see, with this scheme is you need to have money up front to be able to start because, you know, if you get contractors in and you start off, you have to pay them. I just don't know what way it works. You know, obviously, whenever they start work, you have to send in invoices and stuff, and we just don't know yet, but you still need money up front, and a lot of people having to go and try and get a mortgage again or a loan, especially for older generation, it's going to be impossible for them to get a loan to start off
even,
their house.
Even, plus, if you're a family in your 40s or something, like, not all of us have access to the type of credit that we're talking about here. There's an awful lot of people that don't have the income to get an additional loan on top of a mortgage or what have you. I mean, that is just a fact. And then why should you? Are you going to get it recouped? Is everything going to be covered? Sharon, listen, thanks for helping us understand the reality of what you and others are living. Just one question. If you were able to make it work, I think you referenced this a little earlier on, to get out of that house, is there anything locally that's rentable or affordable, like in terms of those options outside of family and friends who have their own defective issues to deal with?
See, the problem is, and again, in our area alone, there's very little houses for rent because majority of them have the defective concrete blocks. I mean, nearly every second house in our area has it. So the rental is just so hard to get.
Yeah.
I don't know how any family, you know what I mean? A lot of families are going to have nowhere to go, and that's the problem. And again, I'm talking for like even for my mum and dad in their 70s, where do they go? They don't want to leave. They're at the age where they should be sitting back and enjoying life. But instead of uprooting and trying to get them somewhere where, I mean, even out of my area, I don't know, you know what I mean? They're not going to go.
Yeah, okay. Listen, Sharon, thanks for helping us to keep highlighting this. I really appreciate it with everything
you,
that you're going through, okay? And hopefully tonight just doesn't, isn't as bad. But even as the storm might happen, something might not be falling down, but the water's getting in there deeper and more damage is being caused. And we've seen people can tell from one winter to the next how their house is worsening. So we wish you, hope you're safe as can be, and hopefully we get some more calmer weather. It's crazy. It's crazy. Thank you so much for helping us speak about that. Kate, hello there, Kate. You're in the Malin area. How are you keeping?
All right, Greg, thank you for letting me come on.
No, it's really important that we are your platform to be able to do this. Talk to me about your situation.
Well, basically the same as Sharon there. Our house has fallen down. It's been condemned. On Sunday, the same, put the children to bed at 8 o'clock. My little girl, who's 9, has already severe anxiety over the house falling down because visibly she can see it. You know, when she's outside, there's not just the cornerstones are missing from our house, but the whole block, there's bits of block work actually missing, and it falls down and then my husband would patch it back up again. So she can visibly see that it's actually crumbling. Her nightmares that she has is of our chimney coming down into her two sisters' room. And she has had a nightmare that she has to be digging through the rubble to get them out. That's her reoccurring nightmare that she has and her fear. Now, on Sunday, we put them to bed, so it was around 8 o'clock. And at that time, it was bad, but it wasn't, you know. It was okay, and we were thinking, yes, it might not be as bad as what they're actually going to say. But then on by 10 o'clock, 10:30, she was up. She was hysterical. The noise of the whole corner of the house, Greg, like a big, huge chunk of blockwork fell out on to where her bedroom is. So she heard the smash when she was like in her room. So she's up. She was hysterical. She had her wee bags packed. She was leaving. She wanted to go down to her granny and granddad's. Now, you know, we have gone to Richard's mother and father's before in the storm, but, you know, to uproot your children every time there's a bit of wind, you know, it's so... I have 5 of them living at home at the minute. And so 10:30, we had 2 cars packed, everything in it, kids, the dog, everything. Then we had to make the drive from Malin to Cairn, which was absolutely horrendous, with trees and bits of things driving on the across the road. You know, it was
Can I just re-emphasise that just to make sure that the listeners fully get this? So we've got a family, Kate and her family, in a house that is so structurally unsound and people are so afraid that the better of the two options is to load a car and travel, as you recognise yourself,
two cars,
weather warning. That's how bad it is that you've had to make that decision that, right, what is
it's
the 11, lesser of
11
two
o'clock
here?
At night.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. And 11 o'clock at night, and it was, and then I was thinking, why did we do this? We would have been, but when we got out to, when me and my husband were actually packing the car, there was bits of debris blowing for, I had to move my car away to the other side of the house completely. Then we also had to knock on to our neighbour's door and tell him that, look, if that house falls in the middle of the night, we are not in it, so don't be, you know, like, it's because this whole side of the noise that comes in, it's horrendous, actually. You'd need to be here in a mica house living in it. It's an absolute nightmare with the noises, the windows don't close, the door, the noising and the banging and the blocks literally falling off your house onto the street. It's horrendous.
Just to reiterate, it's 2024 here. We've had a scheme out for years, and then this new enhanced, listen, it's 100% scheme. That's what we were told. 2024, and we've got a family here in UK with your kids and in this house that has been condemned. The house has been condemned, yes, and you're fleeing the house in a storm for fear of it collapsing down on your children. This is 2024 here. Let's not forget. Go ahead, Kate.
Sorry. Coming back yesterday, my children, then it was like 2 o'clock in the morning before they settled into bed, especially my youngest one. And she felt safe in her granny's house. And we were lucky to have that option to go there. But coming back up the drive yesterday, I was actually dreading to what I was coming up to see is our home. And I looked in the back of the car and she had her fingers in her ears thinking, and she goes, is it okay? And I had to leave them and walk around the house to see if I could take them back into the house. And I don't know the impact that storm's had on our house, whether it's going to be standing, whether the whole side of it's going to be gone. But we cannot afford to stay in the house because it's just so dangerous. It's awful.
Now, we try and protect our children as best we can. And lots of us have gone through very difficult situations where you try and, you know, manage their mental well-being, tell them everything's going to be all right, keep them as safe and sound as you can. The problem when you live in a defective concrete block home is there's reminders everywhere. It's all around you. What can you say to five children going to bed? Can you say everything's going to be all right? The house is not... You can't actually... I mean, you can try your hardest, Kate, but you can't protect them emotionally for this devastation that's around them.
When they hear from the cornerstones, most of my cornerstones have gone now, so it's actually the blockwork that's actually fallen down. So when they hear that thud, they can hear it. So they can hear that, and it was a huge big piece that's come out of the corner of the house. So she heard that. So it's not like they were saying it's going to be okay. Mm. So how do you tell your children, oh, it's all going to be okay? So there's bits of your house blowing around the street, but you know we're safe in this house. So they know that's not. So
look, your house is condemned. You're stuck on the scheme. What about alternative accommodation?
No, Greg, there is no. I feel so strongly that the government are not letting this scheme be accessible to people here and in the Shone because we have nowhere to go. There is no affordable accommodation here. We have been inundated with refugee families that have taken up lots of accommodation, right? Now, that makes it impossible for people like us to access the scheme. So we are stuck in a rut. We are stuck in our house. We cannot get out of our house. So we have got planned permission in now. We're at the stage where we have planned permission for our house. But when that planned permission comes back to us, we have nowhere to go. We have nowhere. So we have to wait until we either build a shed next to our house, get a caravan, or stay in the house because there is no houses in our area. And say maybe I rang up about maybe 2 months ago to a local estate agent, and it was like something nearly £1,000 a month to rent the house.
This is where people with no issue with refugees or asylum seekers.
No issue.
But this is where the problems arise in terms of how it makes people feel.
I'm just wondering.
There's no local accommodation because it's being used for these people. Which again, I'm not pitching one group against another. But this is where the anger comes from because you're stuck
in reality
with your kids. And the house could come down on you and you have no alternative, no options. And
the
it feels like you're being abandoned by the government, does it? Yep.
Yes. The reality is, why did our government send so many refugees to Donegal, especially to Inishowen, right, where we are already in a crisis up here? Because the reason they don't even accept that we are in a crisis in Donegal, so they have sent all these people up here to us and we cannot access the scheme now because there is no accommodation for us. So people are waiting and waiting to get accommodation. There's families living in caravans. There's families living in sheds. It's absolutely disgraceful, Greg, that, you know, that this is actually happening. We are actually, we're going to be homeless. People are going to be homeless.
Effectively, you are homeless, if the truth be told. I mean, you're squatting in a house that's not fit to be lived in.
Yeah.
It is your own house. I hope you understand the language that I'm using.
Yeah.
But that is what you're actually doing. You're sticking it out in a house that your engineer has condemned. In terms of the scheme, as much as you can determine now, Kate, if the wheels started moving, is it 100% for you and your family?
No, it's not 100%, no, not at all. For us to rebuild, like, we have, our house is like 2,700 square foot because we had 8 children. We built our house in 2003, and we built the house for our family. It's not like we built an extortionate house just to have a,
You don't have to defend the size of your house. It's worked very hard to build your house. There are advantages to living here that sometimes the house can be a little bit bigger. We don't need to... I get where you're coming from, and I understand why you might feel you have to explain that, but you don't. It's your house and you've worked really, really hard for it, and it's falling down through no fault of your own. So whatever the house is, it should be returned as is. But go on, Kate.
We still have, like I said, we still have 5 of our children at home. So we still need, like, the same size house would be, we still need it. We still need the amount of living space that we have. So for us now, the big question was, you have to downsize. Everybody's downsizing, you know. And, like, some people can't afford to downsize. Like, you know, if you have so many children at home and you need your living space, you like I said, we built our house in 2003 with that in mind, that we had a bigger family. And, you know, for us now, we don't know what's ahead of us.
Okay.
We've put our planning permission in for the same size house we have, and we'll just have to see, like, our architect and everything that they're saying, you know, that with this current scheme, you're going to be out. It's not going to cover your...
But also, let's not forget that there was some calls, whether it would suit you or not, Kate, for penalty-free downsizing, that you could use the maximum grant available and build a house that's somewhat smaller, and that was rejected. They says no. So, you know, your only option, really, if you want to get the maximum grant, is to rebuild the house as is. Kate, I'm sorry with everything that you're going through. I hope you get through tonight okay. I hope people
Greg, just before you go, as well as that, right, not just about the storm, but health impact on my children living in this house with mould. They're on nebulizers, constant steroids, constant antibiotics, okay? Time off school. This is a bigger picture than just, like, you know, fleeing from a storm or whatever. This is a whole impact on our... We are living in terrible conditions here. And to make it worse, we're paying for living in these conditions. You know, and this nobody realises, only the people that actually live, that what the impact is having on children's health. The amount of times they're off school, you know, because they're on steroids, antibiotics and nebulizers, and diagnosed with asthma on top of everything else, all because of the living conditions.
It's a terrible case. Listen, thanks for your time. Thanks for helping us.
Okay, thank you.
And that's I really wanted someone to explain, as difficult as it is, the health impact on our children living in these houses. I want a study or something done so that it gets the same coverage as the awful plight of those families in Dublin. This is, as you quite rightly said, the untold story. Thanks so much, Kate, and I wish you nothing but what can you wish someone in that situation? That it's resolved? Okay, for some people, the storm has taken everything, with another on the way. Kira from LK Hair Design joins us. Kira, how are you getting on?
Hello, Greg. How you doing? Thanks for calling.
Oh, no, it's important. And sorry for holding you there. I do appreciate your patience there. Your business, I mean, obviously you've got a really loyal clientele who will be sharing the heartache for you. Your business effectively wiped out.
The premises. And I suppose before we go on, you know, after listening to that lady and stuff, and, you know, after everything digesting over the last 24 hours and stuff, you know, I am very grateful that it is the business. It wasn't the house. and no one was hurt, you know. So that's, I have to be very grateful for that, and I'm very conscious of everything that happened in Newton yesterday as well. So, but I have two businesses, and to be honest, they are like my third, my fourth and fifth babies, really. You know, I do, I love my businesses. So, no, LK Hair Design. So third lockdown, my lease was up in the premises in Letterkenny, and I decided to change it up, and I put a log cabin at the house. So didn't just pick any random log cabin, researched it, you know, made sure that everything was proper and it's not just a wee flimsy thing. But so great job. Everybody loved it. And Sunday night then, unfortunately, just whatever way Stormisha was blowing, she just got right in under and just lifted the roof clean off.
I mean, there is nothing left but the four walls there.
In fairness, now the video that I put up was after my husband had managed to, you know, salvage some things. So he was actually working on night shift, so it was just myself and my youngest daughter. She's 16, and I'll tell you, she was a wee trooper. She was just brilliant. So we were sitting in, and in fairness now, we were kind of waiting for the red, but thinking to ourselves, this feels like a red before it was supposed to be the red. And I joked at one stage, and I said, I'm afraid to look out in case my cabin's gone. Just joking. And then when I did eventually look out, then it was just, oh my God. But my husband was on, he worked shifts, so he was actually on nights. And again, by pure luck and chance, I managed to get hold of him before the power went out and before our phone lines went down, because they were out for, I'd say, over 24 hours then. It was last night before we got any power back.
I mean, obviously, Ciara, you talked about the hairdressers being, the premises being like one of your children, but also your clients too, the loyalty that's there and what have you. Do you have another premises that you're able to accommodate them, or was this the only area that you were that was the hair salon?
Well, that is the hair salon, So now, in fairness, I have a lot of lovely hairdressing friends that have reached out to offer me chairs in their salon.
Okay.
And other people that are offering me, you know, units and stuff that they have in storage and that. So I'm so grateful for that.
Okay.
But as I say, even yesterday, my head was just, I couldn't even go there yesterday. It was just a matter of trying to work through the stuff that we managed to get out of the salon. And then, you know, just, I suppose, get my head around the whole thing. But it was so scary.
Yes.
It's just, you know, as I was saying yesterday to my husband, like, you watch the TV and you see these storms in America and different places, and you actually can't, you have no idea. You can't appreciate what they actually go through. You know, we sit there and go, oh, God, that's terrible.
But
when I was out trying to salvage, when I was outside trying to salvage some things, like, it actually took your breath away. I couldn't even breathe. It was just the force of it. I've never experienced anything like it in my life.
And unfortunately, I mean, obviously you had your public liability insurance and all that kind of stuff, but log cabins, by their nature, are hard to get insured, so you have to sort of rebuild this back yourself. In a minute, Ciara, what's the plan, or any message for your clients? I know you've got your social media and you've reached out all to them, but what's the situation for you going forward now, Ciara?
Yeah, well, I will be in touch with everybody individually. I just kind of put out a general message, but I will be in touch with everybody individually. But hopefully, between all the offers and everything, I will get everybody sorted. So, at the minute, I'm only working Fridays and Saturdays anyway, because I was actually in an accident a year and a half ago. So my hand is still not 100%. Okay. So I've only been able to work Friday, Saturday. So in a way, that's lucky enough too, that I have time now to get organized. But like, as far as the cabin goes, I don't think it's repairable. But look, it's, as I say, it's only a piece of equipment, and
And you're so kind in thinking of what other people have been going through in the stories we've heard, but this is also your thing as well, and it's all very subjective, and we appreciate your kind words for others, but it's a really big deal for you too, and a big loss, Ciara. Listen, thanks very much for joining us,
and hopefully
I'm sure you'll get back up fully functioning really, really soon. That's Kira from LK Hair Design. So, Minister Simon Harris, Minister of Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science, talk to us about the significance of this announcement, or these announcements, I should say, for Killybegs and the ATU in Letterkenny.
Yeah, look, I was delighted to be in Killybegs and Letterkenny yesterday for a series of announcements. Maybe first in relation to Killybegs, I went there to announce two things. Firstly, that campus will now provide for electrical apprentices from next September. This is something that has been long sought after, is much needed in the area. But crucially, it will also bring 190 apprentices into the Killybegs campus. So in terms of footfall in the campus, in terms of footfall around the town, it's going to be a very, very significant increase. It will provide opportunities for local employers to be able to access apprentices, and also for local people to be able to take up an apprenticeship without having to travel. The second announcement we made is in relation to Killybegs and other smaller regional campuses. We announced a fund yesterday of €4.5 million to support universities who have multi-campuses, because the cost of running them can be more expensive. You still have to provide the library and the student services, smaller classes, and with that comes cost. So of the €4.5 million, €2.6 million of that will go to the Atlantic Technological University, and they will obviously decide the proportion, but Killybegs will definitely benefit from that. So that was the Killybegs element of the trip.
And just focusing on that, it is not that long ago, people might remember that there were question marks over the future of that campus. Like, we have to go back some time, but this clearly, obviously, is a commitment to its future.
We look very much so, and I was very conscious in visiting yesterday of exactly what you say, because I remember when we established the Atlantic Technological University, I think it's fair to say there was great excitement in the region, but there was also a little bit of nervousness as to what would this mean for some of the traditionally smaller campuses. I gave a commitment then that they would have a bright future. I need to deliver on that, and the apprenticeships is a big part of it. And to be very honest, Greg, from my visit yesterday, I get the sense that Killybegs campus is only warming up here. I mean, they have a very proud record when it comes to culinary courses. Now they'll have electrical apprenticeships. And yesterday they were already making presentations to me about what next they want to do in plumbing and pipe fitting. And I'm sure you and your listeners know they've also received funding to develop an ocean innovation centre, which they hope to submit planning permission for in the next couple of months. Because, look, it's very obvious to everybody in Donegal, it's very obvious to me when I visit the whole marine industry there, and the potential for skills and courses to support local business is huge. So it very much has a bright future. I want to spend some more of our taxpayers' money on finishing the building. They've done an incredible refurbishment job of what is quite an old building, but very modern now. But there's a little bit more they want to do on the top floor, and I'm looking forward to getting an application from them for that as well.
You know, and of course, we need more houses. We need skilled labour. We need labour to build those houses, and we need different skill sets. I mean, the last couple of days has proven that we need people that can do different things, such as keep power coming to homes and that type of thing. I think it's most welcome, and most people listening would agree that we're talking about, you know, not just the IT sector and people going into education in that direction, but also having opportunities to grow what they're good at in different sort of skill sets.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we have a huge shortage of people working in what are traditionally known as the trades and the crafts, and we need to fix that. We need more people to build our homes, to retrofit our homes. As you rightly say, the storm, and I know that Donegal was badly hit, and want to thank everyone who worked so hard to restore power and the like. It's absolutely key we support some of those traditional crafts and trades. But it's also important that I, as Minister, don't just look at the headline number. Like, we saw more people registered as apprentices in Ireland last year than ever before, a historic number, nearly 9,000 new apprentices. However, behind that number is another reality, that sometimes people are having to travel too far to become an apprentice. Sometimes businesses say, well, there aren't any apprenticeship courses in my community. And that's why I'm really taken by the idea of looking to facilities that we have in places like Killybegs and others to see how can we actually put apprenticeships in locally, so that local people don't have to travel, don't have to experience the cost of travelling, and also so that local businesses can avail of that skill set.
And you had further announcements yesterday.
Yeah, I went on to Letterkenny then, to the Atlantic Technological University campus there, and I said three things happened there. The first, we opened a new biomass heating centre. Now, I don't know how good you are in the technical detail. I certainly had to learn a lot, but I was absolutely blown away by this. This is an investment of about 1.9 million in a biomass centre. And what it basically means is they're using wood chip to heat 80% of the main building of the campus. It is an absolute leadership project when it comes to how we can make our university campuses green. They will reduce their carbon emissions by 24%. I think a lot of times when people hear about climate change and climate action, they kind of sometimes worry that politicians are lecturing them or it's all doom and gloom. What we've actually seen in Letterkenny, and huge, huge, huge credit to the ATU and all those involved, what we've seen in Letterkenny is for relatively small investments from government, they can now, as I say, heat 80% of the main building of their campus using renewable wood chips and cut their carbon emissions by 24%. So it was an absolute honour to open that yesterday, to talk to people who'd been involved in the project, to talk to representatives of the Chamber of Commerce. And we then had the signing of two agreements, one between Atlantic Technological University and Ulster University. And you and I have talked about this before, mm-hmm. that I just think there's huge opportunity for collaboration in the Northwest between Derry and Letterkenny and Derry and Donegal. We now obviously have the university in Letterkenny. We have the university in McGee. We, the Irish government, are investing $44 million in expanding the Derry campus. And we want to just see, I think as people in your region do, we just want to see people working together in a practical way. They've signed an agreement yesterday in my presence to put in place joint programmes, to develop maybe joint awards, and also to put in place opportunities for students and staff to go on exchanges between the two universities. A lot, in fairness, has happened in this space already. And I suppose yesterday they just formalised that agreement. And then there was also an agreement signed with the HSE. One of the big challenges I have as minister is I want to keep on expanding the number of places in healthcare, training more nurses, more speech and language therapists, occupational therapists, paramedics, all the things we need. But for every college place I create, we need to then obviously have a matching clinical placement within the health service. So the agreement yesterday was a commitment from the HSE to work with ATU on clinical placement pathways, and also to develop, that ATU would develop new programs to help people who work in the health service upskill and reskill in a way that works for them. So it's a busy day, but
all very positive in terms of development. And I suppose that's the ice cream, and we kind of have to get on to the veggies now in terms of, you know, we need accommodation with the success of the ATU in Letterkenny and indeed Killybegs. And we need, you know, houses that people can live in, to live and work, hopefully, in this region. Look, we'd never begrudge anyone if they want to go and spend a year or 2 years in another country to grow themselves. But we do need people to be able to see their long-term future here. And I suppose at this point you have to look to your ministers, ministerial colleagues, and they have to really fast-track the delivery of that type of stuff. But firstly, just in relation to student accommodation in and around Letterkenny, what is the situation there in terms of the ATU being able to provide its own accommodation, borrow money to do so, or what other plans are there?
Yeah, thank you for reminding me that, because I met the Students' Union in Letterkenny on this yesterday as well. I got a government agreement last Tuesday that we would finally allow the technological universities submit plans to build student accommodation in the regions. People may have seen last week we pressed go on a number of major student accommodation buildings, but truthfully they were all in Dublin or Kildare. And that's not because we're favouring Dublin or Kildare, it's because they had planning permission and were ready to go. I'll be writing to all the technological universities this month, including ATU, and asking them to submit their proposals for student accommodation to my department by the end of March. I want the technological universities to now submit plans, tell us what you can do, tell us what you can do in Letterkenny, and in terms of ATU, tell us what you can do in Sligo and Castlebar and Galway as well. And I know they have plans and ideas in that space. So I spoke to your Students' Union in Donegal yesterday on this, spoke to the management of ATU, and I really look forward to receiving those plans. And I now have a government decision as of last week that we will then look to provide funding and mechanisms to deliver these projects. It is key. I do agree. It is key to their success, because yes, I want, and I met a lot of local people studying in ATU yesterday, which is great. You know, local people able to access university in their region. But I also met people from all over the country. I remember talking to one young student yesterday from Cork. You know, I don't want the ATU just to be about Donegal people studying in Donegal. Of course I want that, but I also want it to be about other people from other parts of the country saying, well, you know, that course up in Donegal there is one of the best in the country. I want to come to Donegal to do that. And that has a huge economic benefit for the region, but it does require accommodation. And last week was a very important step on that road.
Okay, Minister of Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science, Minister Simon Harris, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Good morning, Greg.
And that's where we have to leave it. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9.